IVM.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Sponge Podcast. I'm with Ambi Parmeswaran. We're going to be discussing episode 3 of his book, Sponge: Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Clients. The chapter is called The After Action Report. So, Ambi, market visits that you describe in this book, it's a pretty crazy story. How common are these kinds of visits?
Well, the reality is market visit is the bread and butter of any sales job, right? So, most sales people have to make those, if you're a medical rep, you've got to make those 10, 11 calls on doctors. If you're a sales rep with an FMCG company, you've got to make those 40 calls on shops. This story is an interesting story because it's a market visit story, but it's a very different kind of market visit.
Yes, it is. Yeah? It's the kind of market visit I want to do.
Yeah, so the market visit here is, we had this client called Ani Mohan Das who was marketing this, energy drink. And he was not advertising the product much, and the product he said was doing well. So we asked him, look, we want to know how you're managing to sell this product. Hmm. So he said, the only way I can show you is if you can come on a market visit with me.
Right.
So we said, okay, we'll come on a market visit. We thought we're going to go into the market and, talk to dealers or stuff like that. But he said, no, the market visit will start at 7 p.m. at the library bar in the president. So he said, okay. So I joined the team there. It was, my colleagues, Kinjal Med and Nitin Karkare. And I think I was recovering from bad bout of jaundice. So I was sticking to Diet Coke, and I had my Diet Coke, and these guys started on their first drink. And then he said, okay, Ambi, bye. I'm going to take these guys on a market visit. So the next, and they went on and on and on, I'm told. And the next day, these two guys trooped into my office at about, 12 noon, pretty bleary-eyed. So I said, hey, guys, what happened? What happened last night with Ani Mohan Das? So they said, look, we started in Colaba, and the next stop was somewhere in Bandra. And then after that, they went to Andheri, and then they came back to Santa Cruz. And then Kinjal said, after 5 hops, I forgot, I don't know how many we did after that. And finally, all I remember was I got dropped home. And same with Nitin Karkare. And, they said, look, we were so, bushwhacked. But the funny thing was, he said, in every bar we went to, while the drink was being ordered, the client was sitting and, chatting up the owner of the pub. Hmm. And obviously, he was probably booking orders, or you're selling or doing something. So he was actually doing a sales call. He made whatever, 8-9 calls that night. And he probably booked a ton load of energy drinks, I mean, till you work in the category, you don't know how the category is sold. For example, energy drink is a pretty funny category. People mix it with vodka and drink it. So vodka gives you high, but energy drink keeps you going. So, it's a crazy combination. So these guys came back and said, boss, this man is different. I said, yeah, obviously he's different. He's an army guy and he's seen action in Sri Lanka. You guys should have been careful. You should have stuck to Diet Coke. Says, no. We thought, he's going to give us good stuff. So he gave us good stuff. But, after 6 hours, we said we didn't know which, we didn't know what was happening. And he was going on and on. But, he was a great guy. He's a great guy. And so later I called and told him, what did you do to my people? So he said, no, they want to know how I sell. No, this is how I sell.
But that, so what your team wound up doing was giving you an after action report, right? Which I think you mentioned this chapter, the title of the chapter. Why do you think these after action reports are so important?
See, this after action report is a terminology, I think, is developed by the army. And they have this discipline that, what we don't realize from the outside is Indian Army, as well as, all the armies of all the good nations, have great amount of processes because people are rotated in and out. So if you don't record what you learn for posterity, you're going to lose everything. So after every action, it could be a small action, it could be a big action, they have to file an after action report. And this then goes into the records and it stays. So if tomorrow someone comes and says, look, how do we handle this problem? They know they can go to that particular thing, which, it happened 5 years ago, pull out the after action report and say, what happened? What went right? What went wrong? So in this case, you know, my team came and gave me an after action report, based on their long market visit with Ani Mohandas. And that kind of, you know, the after action to learning was never go on a market visit with Ani Mohandas again.
That's interesting, though. You mentioned two parallel uses for this, right? So one use becomes analysis immediately following the report, immediately following the action. The other use for this becomes building institutional knowledge.
Yeah. So if you don't do that, you know, you're going to lose whatever you've learned, you know, because people come, people go, people get transferred out, people leave. You're not going to save that knowledge. So, you know, the other thing which I learned and which I've used later in corporate life is what is called an action taken report.
Okay.
So, very often you go and you sit through a board meeting and the minutes come and you read the minutes and you take whatever decisions you want to take and you give them whatever approvals and tell them to look at other things. And then you go there after 3 months and you start discussing a new agenda. But I think in public sector undertakings and some other, you know, more, shall we say, more bureaucratic organization, there is what is called an action taken report. So what they do is from the minutes of the meeting, they pull out what are the 10, 12 actions they're supposed to take. And in fact, the board meeting starts by saying, look, this is the action taken report. These are the 12 actions we are supposed to take. We have taken these 5, these 4 are pending, etc., etc. Once the action has been taken, that is then removed from the list.
Right.
But this is a running list, you know. So you can actually look at the action taken report and say, look, guys, you know, this is something you guys are supposed to do. We discussed it 6 months ago.
Right.
What's happened? And then you say, go back and say, oh, no, it's not yet happened. It's not on, you know.
Right.
So you got to, you know, you got to revisit this and, you know, see what's going on.
Right. Interesting. So again, becomes a way of making sure that it's task management in a way.
Absolutely. It's to make sure that things happen, that you're tracking stuff, you know.
Do you think, you've worked with various army people over your life, right? Do you think that these kinds of processes that come from the army into more corporate worlds, do you think that they are a reflection of army culture, or do you think that they are just processes which have been developed independently of the culture of army, the discipline and all that kind of thing?
So I think, you know, I think I was fortunate, you know, I got to meet and work with several of these former army or former armed forces or former navy or former, you know, air force people. And one thing you notice is that, you know, they're all fit, you know, I mean, they are really fit. Okay. But also they are very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember we had a retired wing commander, Chowdhury, who used to run the UDI Yellow Pages, the Calcutta operation. And he had 145 sales executives in Calcutta. And I don't know how he did it, but, you know, all these 150 people were in the office every day at 9 a.m. And those of you
in
who...
In Calcutta.
Yeah, exactly, in Calcutta, right? So you know, and they were there in the office at 9 a.m. They have to sign in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't sign in, they leave. You know, the guy lands up at 9:15, he leaves his briefcase and he goes home.
Okay.
Right? And they have to report back to office at 5 o'clock every day. And he used to run it like bloody clockwork, you know, and I was amazed. I said, how do you do it? So he didn't understand my question. He said, what do you mean? How do you do it? Is there any other way of running this operation? You know, Ambi, these are all 21, 22-year-old kids. They never worked before.
Right.
And if I don't train them on day one to follow this discipline, they're going to be bent all their life, you
right.
know. So interestingly, you know, Madras Management Association is run by a great guy, you know, Vijay Kumar, who's a group captain in the Indian Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I was doing an event with in partnership with MMA some years ago, and we had put 9:30 as a start time for the event. And at 9:30, he was there at the mic saying, you know, welcome. So I said, look, you know, the hall is half empty. He said, I don't care a damn. If it says 9:30, we start at 9:30. And he said, look, I've created this discipline. Now, everyone who comes for my programs, no. If it says 6 p.m., it'll start at 6 p.m.
Right.
If it says 7 p.m., start at 7 p.m. Whether the hall is half empty, half full, fully empty, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I will start. And it works, right? I mean, I wish, you know, this kind of discipline spreads around the country in every event. You look at it, you know, you announce sometime, people straggle in late, you know, and the whole thing goes for a 6.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pleasure when you work with people who have some kind of respect for everyone's time, you know?
So just as a, I don't want to say contrasting, but slightly this. So one of the questions I would ask around this is, so the army is something that over the years is extremely disciplined, extremely process-driven, extremely rigid. Do you think that in the corporate world, those same aspects, process-oriented, disciplined, rigid, are they applicable or do we need more flexibility in the corporate world?
Well, I think that the simple answer is yes, you need more flexibility in the corporate world because in the army, they are, you know, their life is at stake and right. they can't sit and keep arguing, you know, should we go left or should we go right? Someone takes a decision, we go right and everyone goes right because, you know, otherwise you're going to get killed, right? But in fortunately in corporate, you're not, you know, you're not putting your life at stake. So things are different. Hmm. But at the same time, there is so much we can learn from the army, you know, from the armed forces. Interestingly, in America, the armed forces and the business schools have a very strong relationship. You know, the armed forces send people regularly to business schools to go through programs. Business schools invite army, marine leaders to come and talk to business leaders. So it's a great exchange of ideas and things. I don't think enough of that is happening in India. Though Army has its Army War College, and you know, I was invited to speak at the Army War College, and it was a great experience because you know, they were rapt listening to everything I was saying, and the 2 days I spent there, I learned a lot. You know, talking to them, it's a whole new world. Mm-hmm. We can learn a lot from each other, and I think, you know, we are missing out on something. We are only looking at retired Army people who take short service to more to come in as, you know, head of admin or head of HR.
Right.
But I think all of them can be retrained to become business leaders, you know. There's a whole opportunity we are missing out.
Interesting. What kind of roles do you think apply well? I mean, like outside of the HR and admin, as you mentioned, where people are being recruited, what kind of roles do you think that Army people could function well in? I mean, like, or what kind of roles do you think that they would thrive in given their experience?
I think they can, you know, given, you know, obviously they will need to understand the complexities of the business world, mm-hmm. right? So if we can create, you know, some programs, right, to bridge them, and I think they can be CEOs of companies. Why not? Why should they be only in charge of administration or HR? They right. can be anything, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think experience applies to all kinds of things, right? I mean, like if you have the right kinds of experiences, you can apply those to all different kinds of facets.
Absolutely. Yeah. They can lead companies. I'm sure about that.
Speaking of companies and army and companies, right? You mentioned the Israeli army and how they work with their recruits, right? Especially they have this 8200 division. I think that's a really interesting thing that they do over there. Do you think that, first would you like to kind of talk a little bit about what that is? And then do you think that's something that we should apply in India?
So you know, there are two countries which have this compulsory army thing. One is Singapore, mm-hmm. and the other is Israel. Where after you finish high school, I think at the age of 16 or 17, you're taken into the army and you spend a compulsory 2 or 3 years and you can opt to stay for longer, mm-hmm. But the 2 to 3 year is compulsory. Now, what I think Israel has done is, you know, is fascinating, and it's there in this book called Startup Nation. You may say, what has startups got to do with the army? It's kind of, you know, anachronism, right? I mean, startup is all about free thinking, imagination, innovation. An army to you means rigid, getting up in the morning at 5 o'clock and going for the drill and, you know, going weapons training and stuff like that. But Israel, you know, they've thought this through brilliantly. They've so created this cadre called the 8200.
8200, that's right.
And what they do is they monitor the schools for the brightest of kids. Even when they are in 8th standard or 8th grade or 9th grade. And these bright kids are then motivated to come into the army. But they work in this division called 8200. This 8200 division is called the tech division.
Okay.
So these guys work on high-tech stuff. High-tech stuff could involve machine learning, artificial intelligence, programming, developing algorithms, looking at big data, looking at fuzzy data, stuff like that. And they work for 2 years. Sometimes they stay on for work for 2-3 years. And then they go out of the army. They get a formal engineering degree from a university, and they do their own startup. Mm-hmm. So I'm told a large number of, and you know, I mean, Israel is probably per capita the highest number of startups, you know, as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told a large number of these startups are actually kids who come out of the army's 8200, you know, division, which is fantastic. So I think, you know, if I were to kind of extrapolate that and bring it into India, I think India, and at Army War College, when I was talking to some of those, you know, senior officers, they're saying, look, we are having a problem of getting the right talent into the Indian Army. The Army, Air Force, Navy complexion is going to change. And it's no longer going to be fought by people, you know, foot soldiers.
Right.
It's going to be fought by technology. It's going to be fought by drones. It's going to be fought by, you know, artificial
warfare.
Cyber warfare, artificial intelligence. So Indian Army has to recruit a different cadre of people, right? Which means kids studying at the top IITs, the top engineering colleges, have to salivate for a job in Indian Army, just as they salivate for a job in Google or Facebook or Twitter.
I think actually working for the Army for top engineers is probably more interesting because you work on deep tech, right? At a lot of these other places, you're working on stuff which is fairly surface oriented, right? I mean, like it's fairly superficial. Superficial is a negative word, but it's still very much on the surface, right? Whereas when you're working for defense, you get deep technology that you can work on.
Oh yeah, and to be fair, you know, they do have big budgets.
Mm-hmm.
They do have sanctions to, you know, seriously improve what we are doing in terms of digital competencies in the army. So I think, you know, they have to fix it. And I'm told they're working on campaigns which, you know, to ensure that the brightest of the young people are attracted to come to the army. So maybe there is an opportunity to do a Israel 8200 kind of a thing in the Indian armed forces as well. And I'm sure someone is thinking about it now.
I think it's really interesting if they could run if you think of this 8200 as an incubation program, right? The possibility of the Indian Army running an incubation program for technologists, I think, is a very interesting idea. I think that you will get a lot of benefit out of that.
I think both ways. Indian Army will get a lot of good quality people working for them, and hopefully the innovation ecosystem will get a lot of good ideas for us to, you know, kind of flower out. And look at the kind of technology. I mean, Israel leads in drone technology.
Yes, it does.
Israel leads in, you know, character recognition. Israel leads in motion technology. Israel leads in all these. Yeah.
Geographical systems.
Yeah, exactly.
One.
Yeah. So they lead in all that. So we got a chance of, you know, doing all that. We got so many bright young people, and you know, you just got to light the right fire. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Great. I think that is a great place to end this episode. Thank you very much. And we'll be back next week with Chapter 4 of Flying Without a Net.
Yeah. Thank you very much.